and welcome to Listening at Warwick podcast. In this episode, Caroline and John talk about collegiality, the importance of word of mouth, and how digital solutions were forged through communities of practice. They swap notes on adapting to online teaching and what they plan to keep as we return to a new normality. Caroline is a teaching-focused professor in the economics department and a relative newcomer to Warwick, starting in September 2020. John is a senior teaching fellow in career studies at the Centre for Lifelong Learning. This is part two of their conversation. To listen to them talk about their experience of the great pivot online, tune in to part one via the Listening at Warwick podcast.
So it sounds like the blend in terms of how you made it work was relatively, was in parallel to what they would have normally had. It was just that they were somebody somewhere else and they were accessing it live as they would have been had they been physically present in a seminar or a lecture.
Yeah. So the only difference was that first hour of lecture material that was now provided as asynchronous recorded materials. But that works quite neatly for economics because for a lot of modules, there is a lot of technical material. So for my own modules, but definitely it's the case for colleagues as well, there would often be a lot of technical material that's diagrammatic or often just working through equations. And that's the material I'd always thought in the past. Do you know, one year I should just work out how to record this in advance so students can work through like lines of equations before they come to a lecture. And I'd never quite got around to doing it. And now it's second nature to do that. Creating PowerPoint slides and then talking to my PowerPoint slides. So I'd be a little sort of, I do use quite a few equations, quite a few diagrams, but it was sufficient to be able to just click and show, you know, new equations or new lines and curves on diagrams coming up one at a time and then being able to sort of use a highlighter in PowerPoint. That was fine for my purposes.
So what sounded like really helped is providing something that mirrored to a high degree what the students would have been getting anyway, but taking advantage of the lecture cast. So in that way, do you find it provided a degree of reassurance to the students that it was kind of mirroring what they might have had usually?
I think so, yes. And I think the other thing that we tried to do to help them, and this kind of spread via word of mouth in the department. One colleague had created a table in the module Moodle page where they had this table that set out really neatly to the students. For each week, you need to watch this recording, then this recording, then this recording, and then come to the live lecture. After the live lecture, a link to the recording was placed in the module Moodle page. Then in the next column, there was a link to the question sheet for the relevant seminar. And it was really clearly set out for the students. You do this and then this and then this. And I think that really helped the students because they were so used to in the past, you go to this lecture, then you work through this question sheet and you go to this small group seminar. And the new thing for them would be that they were going to have to be more independent and they'd have to be more organized in their learning for themselves. So quite a lot of us adopted this same basic structure for having a table for each of our module Moodle pages where we set out for the students the order of what they needed to do each week. And I think that was really helpful.
Yes. Yeah.
Before the start of the 2021 academic year, it was decided that as well as creating this ebook, all colleagues who would be teaching in the first term would be put into small teams of around four colleagues, and they were grouped according to the types of modules that they taught. And these sort of small groups of around four colleagues were intended to be very informal support networks. And we were encouraged to create a safe space where we could try out ideas. So within our groups of four, we were asked to create just a sample of an asynchronous lecture recording to prove to ourselves that we can do it before we had to do it for the students, but that we could show to our colleagues. So, and then we could see how different colleagues had created these asynchronous pre-recorded lecture materials. We were then asked to show each other how we'd set up our module Moodle pages. And we were also asked to talk about how we would organise materials for the small group seminars. So I fall under the category of an applied microeconomist. So I was put in a group with, I think, three or four other applied microeconomists. And we were asked to sort of try out our asynchronous lecture recordings on each other and try out giving a live lecture and show module Moodle resources, etc. And to have, I think we ended up having two meetings, one where we focused on the asynchronous and pre-recorded lecture materials, on one where we went on to look at what we do in a live online teaching environment, be that a large lecture or a small group teaching environment. And that was really helpful. So I had one of these people who I thought it was actually the person who set up this table for students on how to create them resources, but I think they actually would credit somebody else. But it was having this group of sort of four or five people where you could try things out. So, for example, in live lectures in the past, I'd used online polling where students use mobile phones, but I'd never done that in an online teaching environment because I'd never taught online before. And so I was able to say to colleagues, okay, the thing I'd like to try out in my sample online lecture is online polling. And in the past, I'd always done online polling where students had to answer A, B, C, or D. And I said, I want to do that. And I also want to try out online polling, creating a word cloud, because I've never done that before. And I got to do it with my colleagues before, like 2 weeks before I was ever going to go into an online classroom and do it with actual students. And that really helped. And it was a very democratic process as well, because it was a real mix. So there was a new assistant professor in our group, there was a teaching fellow with maybe just 2 years of postdoctoral teaching experience, there was the deputy head of department, and there was myself. And I felt under huge pressure for the first meeting, because I knew I'd come in as a teaching focused professor, so people were expecting me to be a great lecturer, but I'd never taught online. And the deputy head of department, who I didn't know at all, was in the group. And I was thinking, I've got to do this well in the sample. But actually, it was the teaching fellow who was in charge of the group. It wasn't the deputy head of department. He was very open and said he was nervous about moving to online and blended learning. And it was great to have this group of people where we just got to try things out to see if they worked. And then it worked so well that the department did the same thing again for colleagues who would be teaching for the first time in the second term. So again, sort of, you know, first week in January, they were put into groups, but they were also put into groups with at least one person who had taught in the first term, so that there'd be somebody there who could answer the queries. So it wasn't just groups in the start of the second term of people who'd never taught online before. There was someone there who was seen to be a friendly face who'd gone through the experience in term one. So as well as having the ebooks for everybody and the one-to-one dialogue, we had these small groups that worked really well. A few colleagues didn't engage, and you can't force colleagues to engage, but it was very noticeable that for me, I was asked to support a couple of colleagues during the year who were really struggling with the move to online teaching and blended teaching and learning, and they were the colleagues who didn't engage in this small group before the start of the relevant teaching term. And the other thing is, and I can take no credit for this at all, but the department, having created the ebook for colleagues, realized that it would probably be helpful for students to have something similar. So a colleague had suggested this, and it was before I started in the department, and again got a small group of colleagues to work with her on this and created a comparable ebook on the move to blended learning for the students. And that was fantastic. And so I nominated her for a weight award because it seemed such a great thing to do. And the wonders of Moodle, or one of the wonders of Moodle, is that you can check to what extent students or whoever are using resources. And we found out that the student ebook on the move to blended learning had been accessed over 14,000 times by students. I mean, and you know, we ruled out all the times when colleagues had accessed it as well. So the colleague who created this was successful and got a weight award this year. So the one thing I'd add to how I did things myself was, yes, I had the pre-recorded lecture materials and I did sort of 3 20-minute chunks for each module for each week. In the first term, the online live lectures seemed to work really well, but when I reflected back, I wasn't happy with them. The students seemed happy, the feedback was great. I knew I wasn't supposed to introduce new material, so I would always start off by getting the students, I'd ask them questions to link the material they'd covered that week in the pre-recorded materials with the stories that were covered in the media that week, in the serious media, and this would link to one of their assessments. And then I would ask them if they had any questions. I'd have prepared some questions. So it was very much a dialogue and lots of students engaged. But I was really worried that I wasn't including all the students, and the most comfortable students would talk and ask questions and answer questions, but I wasn't convinced that everybody did. So when I did something similar in the second term, the one difference I made was that for the live online lectures in my second term module, which was to MSc students, I created a Padlet each week, and they'd all be given a specific reading to read before the online live lecture. So the pre-recorded materials were more theoretical. They'd be asked to read a more applied paper for the live online lecture, and they'd be asked questions about it, first of all, to provide answers using a Padlet, and then we'd discuss it. And it was a way of getting everyone involved. I think that's the one specific thing I've not mentioned. John, how did that work for you?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was really interesting to hear about the experience of how you manage things with quite a large group of undergraduate students one of my key points I've found out, particularly over the last 5 to 6 years, is the impact of the pre-tertiary experience on students' expectations of learning, and how if you take a very programmatic, do this by this, and this is what you need to do, and this is where to find it approach, then that often mirrors the kind of experience that they've had when they've been studying A-levels or BTEC or wherever it might be. In the Centre for Lifelong Learning, our courses are highly blended learning. So we've been doing this for quite a while. So what we've generally done is had 2 full days at the start of a module where students come in and study, you know, with us 9 till 5, which is a combination of lectures, group discussions, role play simulations and so on, highly interactive, based on what we call the Learning Alliance, which features as part of the teaching materials, because, you know, we're obviously training career development professionals who work with clients in a very developmental way. So we try and mirror that in our teaching. And then they go onto Moodle with almost like a week by week, this is what you do. And then that includes a blend of or textured materials, like a recorded lecture, possibly a topic reader, and as well as these book chapters, which you can segment on Moodle, with core reading and then further reading. So whilst you're guiding them through, you're also giving them a framework within which they can follow their own paths. So it's that blend of like a semi-structured type of interview, if you like. What we did this time around was as you've done, you know, with the undergraduates, is mirror that by using Teams. So we would still run the two-day event through Teams. What helped with that was a, and again, this is where, which is what I did. I sent one of the key issues, and I know I'll come back to practicalities, but we have learners who've often got an existing Teams account. And so when they logged into Teams and they said, I can't get what you've got. And what's happening is that the cookies on the machine were taking them through to their work-based Office account. So a lot of the kind of workarounds and guides to e-learning we were sending out is screenshots of how to log out of their existing Teams account and log into our one kind of thing. So that was very important, particularly when they're at a distance, because they weren't coming in and they were all over the UK. Plus, we had this year about 15 Chinese students who were not in the UK. They weren't allowed to travel. So one of the things that we also had to factor in the learning is understanding A, the time difference. So if we were doing a lecture at 9 o'clock in the morning, it was about 3 o'clock in China. So if we were running a whole day 9 to 4, then they might be going really quite late into the day. So again, it sounds like a very practical sort of point. The other challenge we found was we do an awful lot of group work and we set them tasks. We also get them to do quite progressive interview exercises, which work very well on Teams, but we had to think very hard about how we would do it. Plus, developing the confidence of international students who often would not turn their camera or their microphone on because they didn't feel confident with the English language capabilities. Plus, their experience, if they've been taught in a UK university, particularly if it's a large business studies course, is that they would often say, we didn't do an awful lot of seminar work, or the seminars were 50 students plus, and so we didn't say very much. So we had to work very hard in terms of encouraging them to contribute. And this, again, will sound very basic, but often we would have to name them and say, okay, so-and-so, what was your view about that one? And simply wait and manage the online silence, and they would eventually say something. Actually, the technology worked very well once we'd settled down. It was more the practicalities of creating a genuinely interactive experience online synchronously, because we knew that they were accessing the asynchronous stuff, because as you say, Moodle gives very comprehensive stats about who's accessing it and when and how many times they're clicking on, and whether some students go in at the start, download everything and then never look at Moodle again. So does that mean that they're engaging or not? Or some students kind of peck at things. I think we established a way of very short but very different activities lasting 20 to 25 minutes. So a bit of presentation, discussion, individual reflection, and then something else which was slightly different. So they would go online and they would come back. And so that pacing of the synchronously delivered materials and then students accessing asynchronously prepared, but it was still part of the whole teaching day, was very important in that pacing. So that students just thought, I fancy checking my Facebook account now. I'm just going to turn my camera off for a bit and just sit there and not do anything. So that's how we manage it. But that's very different from a regular week on week kind of relatively to our kind of lecture. We did experiment with weekly seminars, particularly with the international students, and that worked very well. But that was highly interactive.
So I was really interested in what you said about breaking up those 2 days, because as you started to say about them, I wondered about how you maintained the students' energy levels, but you clearly did. So that was really interesting. And I think I had the same concern that you had about international students worried about interacting and nervous about their English levels, which is part of the reason I introduced the Padlet when I did the MSc teaching, where there were a lot more international students, and again, some studying from various places around the world. So I hoped it would give them the confidence if they could type answers into a Padlet first. So yes, so sorry, I just thought I'd jump in. The other thing I might say as well is that just last month I did do some teaching for WBS, and suddenly it was moving to a model that's much more similar to what you've just explained, John, where now modules are taught in four-day intensive blocks. But WBS by June had moved to having or returning to in-person teaching, but with students calling in who couldn't be there in person. So three quarters of the students were in the room and the remainder were calling into the session. But then you can divide up those sort of like intensive days of teaching where you do a section of teaching, then you have a discussion, then you set a question, etc.
Yeah, without being too arch, I think it would be great if there was a consistent fibre optic rollout across England to enable CPD learners, particularly. Again, that might sound a slightly flippant point, but I think connectivity is an issue, particularly with distance learning students. I think it would also be helpful from my perspective if there was a more standardised way of recording online lectures that allows students to access things in a straightforward way. Sometimes slightly flummoxed by the lack of access issues. But we've shifted, I do a PGA with teachers and head teachers in schools, and we had a residential component, which was very nice because we used to go to conference facilities and stuff ourselves silly with coffee and cakes. We're keeping that synchronous online blended because of the access issues. I think schools are still nervous about letting teachers and senior leaders out, so we're going to keep that. And I think the thing that we will keep is I like the way this continually challenges you to answer the question, what value are you trying to add at each stage of your pedagogy, rather than just doing it because we always do it that way?
So for me, and I think for colleagues in economics more generally, I think the thing that we'll keep, regardless of what happens in terms of a move back to face-to-face large lectures or not, I think a lot of us will keep to using pre-recorded lecture materials for the very technical materials that we teach. So we don't suddenly stump the students by going through, like, working through 30 equations in a row in a lecture, and instead they can watch that in advance, they can go over it as many times as they like, they can slow it down, they can speed it up. I think that's great. The thing that amazed me when I started in the department was the reliance on paper. So until this year, for every module, the students got a booklet of all the lecture handouts at the start of the term, and they got a physical booklet. And I've not come across that at other universities for a number of years. That's had to go. And I think that's great. And it's up to students now if they want to print things out themselves or whether they're comfortable keeping their materials as e-files and sort of making notes on them in whatever way they do. So I think it's good that we've moved to be more confident with pre-recorded lectures for technical material. We've got rid of paper. That's great. The one question mark remains about how we assess students using exams. I've moved away from final exams for both the modules that I teach. And that's fine because I teach quite applied material. But for these very technical subjects, I think there have been challenges and concerns regarding academic discipline for a very small minority of students, but still it's a concern. But there is that uncertainty about whether we should, and whether in some circumstances it's actually more appropriate to have in-person exams.
And interestingly enough, my wife downstairs at the moment is doing proctoring, where she's sitting there watching somebody doing an exam online.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, and it's been a really nice experience to actually have that opportunity to reflect on how much we've learned and on how things have changed over the past year.
And I think it would be really helpful to try and roll out this process of reflection so that people can see the really great stuff that they do, how to share it, so that we're building capacity progressively.
thank you for taking the time to listen to this Listening at Warwick podcast. We have lots more episodes discussing blended and online learning at the University of Warwick. So until next time.